Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So in this journey of swimming in the stream of Bhagwan's own writings, we are now in chapter 5 of Sandeha Nivarini. And this chapter, unlike other chapters, is special because in this, Bhagwan has so beautifully penned a poem, a deep, profound, and revealing poem. And Bhagwan says that try to understand what every line of this poem conveys. If you do that, then I will tell you the concept of who am I. So this poem is to prepare us for what is coming in the coming chapters of Sandeha Nivarini. We are now in the fourth segment of this chapter 5. We have dealt with three segments of this poem, and now in the previous episode we discussed the fourth segment of this poem, and there were so many beautiful concepts to be understood, to be deliberated upon. We began the discussion and at the end of 1 hour realized that we have not even touched on many other aspects of this segment that Bhagwan has clearly indicated. So with prayers at his lotus feet, we will continue today with the same segment. We will listen to this set of four stanzas, and pray to him to guide our thoughts so that at the end of these 60 minutes, we are in a better position to walk on this path with more clarity and more courage. And to join us in this discussion, we have Brother Bhargav from the university and Brother Srinivas Rao, who have always been there as part of the Vahini Satsang. So let's listen to Swami and then we will start our deliberations.
Oh, the puzzled education doll. Forgetting the purpose of education, you strive to just fill your belly and cry with jealousy at others' merit. Do not rejoice that your wrong desires have fructified. How can you blindfold Chitragupta, who keeps account of all your deeds? Do not be proud of your beauty, youth, and all-round agility. In not so distant future lies the deathly dance of senility. With mobility gone and sight impaired, face wrinkled with grey hair, the servants ridicule you as an old monkey, and you get irritated and shout at them.
So that is the segment. And in the previous episode, we spent a lot of time discussing one idea, isn't it, Brother Bhargav and Srinivas Rao? Yeah, on jealousy, because Swami here said, oh, the puzzled education doll, forgetting the purpose of education, you strive to just fill your belly and cry with jealousy at others' merit. And we spent time on how today's education caters so much not to what the soul of education should be. And in the whole process of we getting lost in the labyrinth of our learning, we feel we are educated, but at the same time, as Bhagwan says, the end of education is character, but as someone very beautifully said, at the end of your education, you become a character. So that's what we discussed last time about jealousy. But let's move on to the next point here.
Mm-hmm.
Here where Bhagavan is talking about, do not rejoice that your wrong desires have fructified. How can you blindfold Chitragupta, who keeps account of all your deeds? That takes us to the law of karma, isn't it?
Yes. And being one thing, I was just thinking about this, reflecting on this. I found few interesting things about Chitragupta. I like, if you just go to Google, you'll search, you'll get. There's a story which says that when the creation was made by Lord Brahma, he entrusted Yama the responsibility of taking care of the souls. Mm-hmm. Depending on their merit and their demerits, they can go to the Swarga or the Narka, the hell or the heaven. So it seems Lord Yama told Brahma, this speaks too confusing for me. So millions of souls come. I need someone to keep a note of what is happening, who is doing what.
Mm-hmm.
So then Lord Brahma, it seems the story goes that he does penance for thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
and then comes from his body, emerges this being with a pen and an ink pot,
mm-hmm.
who is called Chitragupta. And then he keeps the account of all these deeds of all the people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. And then second thing, like Swami always says, whatever Sanatana Dharma, our Indian tradition, Indian culture, Indian tradition, Indian thought, has a very, very deep understanding and deep insight into it. So, if you just see the name, Chitragupta. Chitra is image.
Yes.
Gupta is something which is hidden.
Yes.
So, we should not think, I felt something about this Chitragupta name as such.
Yes.
It's not that when you leave the body, you go there, someone is there with a big book of accounts. Oh, you have done this. It's yes. not that. I feel that might be talking, I don't know whether you can also agree to this. Looks like it talks about our subconscious mind.
Yes.
Chitragupta. Whatever deed we do, without our knowledge, an impression of it is made yes. on our subconscious mind.
Mm.
On, you say, like, people say that when you leave the body, you just leave the body. Your mind, your desires, your likes, dislikes, your opinions, your dogmas, all go with you. Till you give up everything and become free. Mohakshaya. Till you remove your moham fully, those things are carried away, and depending on that, you get a next birth. So just talking about law of karma. So basically whatever we do, like what Swami is telling here, it's not that someone else, some far or somewhere else is recording it. Actually your own mind, Chitragupta, is that image of what you're doing in your own mind. Maybe your mind is actually recording whatever you do.
I think that is what you mentioned is very significant. This whole process of documentation, Chitragupta, yeah. is you think no one is watching,
yeah.
but everything is being watched. Not only watched, it is being documented. And it is being preserved in a manner that nothing can destroy it.
Yeah. And it is not somewhere outside.
Yes.
The Swami says, it's yes. my own. Because we say our karma which comes in this birth is
yes.
what is there as, like what fructifies now.
Yes.
It all comes because of our subconscious mind.
Absolutely.
So basically it is nothing but the image of every activity, every karma is taken without our knowledge,
yes.
in our own minds.
Everything is stored, as they say in the Akashic records,
yeah.
everything is there. And so, to think that I have done this and no one knows, or I have done this and I can get away with it,
yes.
is a very, very foolish and childish idea. And so that is what Swami is saying, do not rejoice that your wrong desires are fulfilled. Or fructified, you think, you know, I thought of harming this person and I have done it actually and nothing happened to me.
Nothing yeah. happened, yes.
Nothing happened to me and so I'll do it again.
Yes, correct.
And again nothing happens and I actually grow and I actually prosper in that whole process.
Mm.
And so that becomes a habit for me.
Eventually it catches up.
It catches up.
At some stage.
Because at some
it
stage,
is not
yes.
someone else who is doing it. You yes. yourself will catch yes. up with your own mind, yes. your own impressions, your mm. own vasanas and samskaras, whatever we have.
Yes.
Those will only catch up.
Many of my friends also used to ask me, does Swami really know everything?
Mm-hmm.
Then I also thought about it, because it's when you are with Swami, dealing with Swami on a daily basis physically, when he is inquiring about certain things as if he does not know, then you tend to think that maybe Swami does not know everything, so we have to tell him everything. But I have seen that even physically also, if when you are dealing with Swami, if you have done anything, say, wrong, which you know yourself that I have done wrong, you cannot face Swami. One is the guilt conscience will be there, but it does not happen to me when I am facing you, say. When I'm in front of Bhargav or Bishu.
Yes.
But when Bhagavan is physically in front of me,
yes,
it even he need not know. But, you know, there is something in that power in
that
him.
That presence.
Yeah, that presence and this light,
yes,
they both meet. And I'll be shivering, say.
Yes.
So then that is how I concluded that he need not know, say. But if I know, he knows it. Because there is no me, there is only him.
Correct. Yes.
That is how I concluded. That you need not think whether Swami knows or not. It's what is more important is you know it. And when you know it, there is no, some, there is nothing like you. There is only him. So he definitely knows. Mm.
Just to add to this, like I remember, we always have this thing. Now we say, oh, karma means we show our forehead. The lines are written on your forehead. See, what can I do? It's all the karma. They say.
Nudhirata.
The Nudhirata. The writing which is on the forehead, they say. In Telugu, they say. So, I remember once, a few of us were there. Swami had called us for a personal audience. We have a lot of fortunate viewer. Few of us were there. We, like that time of the day when Swami had just given darshan and he was going inside, few of us were present. Swami called them. Two or three boys missed out. They were outside. They had gone for something and they were coming. So what happened? Then Swami was sitting in the interview room. All of us had just all settled down. And Swami was saying, okay, tell what is your name, what are you doing? Suddenly the door latch opens and one of the boys, he peeps in. Swami feels a little upset. Swami gets a little upset. Who is this who has come in after I settled down and everything
and has the courage to open the door.
Open the door. So Swami, he did very lot of
trepidation
in his heart. Swami told, no, not now, you go out. Swami very clearly, you go out. So it's very, very natural. Papam, we all are getting such a beautiful chance from Swami and this boy missed it. He's our own brother. We were, and there was a sense of some disappointment among the boys. Some 15-20 boys were there inside that day. So Swami sensed it. And then you know what statement he made in Telugu? My God, it's profound. He showed his forehead and told, "Prati vadi, prati lineu naak telsunu. Yavarki yepudenti valo naaku telsunu." So it means that he showed his forehead and said, everyone's every line means everyone's every prapti or whatever is supposed to be deservedness of every being in this universe. I know whom to give what. That statement, the disappointment which was there in all of us changed into awe. My God, we're in front of whom? Who is this person we're interacting so closely with? This person who's just sitting in front of me, maybe a few meters away from on the chair, he's none other than the master of the universe. He's telling, I know everyone's every line is every act of karma, means what I can say, the progression of karma of every being. He knows, and he knows when to give what, so that it becomes the
so
best.
Nothing in the avatar's life is random.
Yes, that's all.
Never. Nothing in the universe is random.
Random, that's all.
These type of stern words from Swami comes at very defining moments when he knows it has come to a point where I have to make it clear to them what they are thinking about me. They should not have any wrong notions about me. At such times he will tell such strong words. Because see, even what we do by way of some mistake or some wrong deeds, the prompting comes, I feel, from deep within. He is the source.
Correct.
Okay, there is one intervention by our minds. we pick up that and then commit this error, say. And then begins the game. Because the Lord is now seeing, waiting and seeing whether he will admit to me, whether he will tell it to me. All these opportunities are given to you.
Hmm. Whether and you are repenting for it.
Yes. Or not, yes.
No, first of all, whether he is open to me or not, whether he is telling to me or not, that because you are supposed to be open with Lord. Yes. If you lose that opportunity, then you will be doing more errors, you will be paying more for it.
Yes.
If you act in front of him, he is the master actor.
And if you admit to him your error,
yes,
there is no better friend than Swami.
Yes.
Absolutely.
He is the first one to help you and he'll be the happiest.
Yes.
Even that Swami says, "Na, even the thief prays to me and
starts his theft."
So that's also a good thing actually. You should do whatever you can do, right or wrong, tell him and do.
It's might a wonderful be, might be down very, the line. The same very, thief.
Swami says that if you tell it to him, offer it to him, it will not take you downward path.
Yes.
Might be he'll get formed. He'll get transformed.
Each same thing is an opportunity for you to grow and evolve. For sure. Even the error leads you to something good.
Yes. And again, when I was narrating this incident, I remembered only Chitragupta knows. But Swami knows what Chitragupta has written and how he has to come and intervene and give it. That Swami himself knows.
Yes.
But I don't know. I heard this some few years back. I can't vouchsafe for its authenticity, but I had remembered one of the devotees had told me, I don't know whether I can I share that, I remember, but I don't know where it was. He had told me that one experience he had read of one devotee of Swami, an overseas devotee, who had a near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seems he narrates after that when he leaves the body and goes, then he sees the lokas, like same, the way we see this loka, that loka.
Yes.
And then finally he goes to a place where people are, the souls are standing and they're being questioned, okay, what you've done good, you've done bad, what is it and all that. So there, actually, this person sees a person sitting with a big book opened and then, okay, with all that, trying to tell, okay, you have done this, you have done this, you have done this. So it seems his turn comes. I don't remember the name of the devotee. I don't remember when it was, what. But I just remember this experience. That's why I thought I'll share. So when this turn of this devotee comes, when Chitragupta, the being, he yes. thought this is Chitragupta. It can't be Chitragupta
yes.
because sitting with a big account book and all that.
Yes.
And then when he sees this and starts telling something, suddenly Swami comes from nowhere and says, "No, no, just leave him. Don't worry about it." And takes this person and takes him back. And then after that, he comes back.
Yes.
Swami says, "You have to do some more work. You go back."
Yes.
So, when I heard this, when I read Chitragupta, we do good, we do bad, we do all that. But when God is there with us, Avatar himself is there, he'll give you the chance to reform yourself and he has the power to even overrule Chitragupta.
Yeah.
In that way. Swami says, "I can cut your karmas in
yes.
that way."
Yes.
Like Shishupala, 99 mistakes he'll allow you to do. He will allow you to hide from him 99 times. But you cannot keep on doing that.
Mm.
At one stage, you will have to meet your end.
Yeah.
I mean, two thoughts come to mind. One is the incident that Brother Bhargav, you mentioned, refers to Walter Cowan.
Oh, is it true? Okay, yeah.
Because Walter Cowan's episode, if you read in its entire detail, it's a very long story.
Mm-hmm.
It will take more than an hour to narrate. But that is the gist of it, wherein, he died and then he went to this hall and then Bhagavan came and Swami says, "No, I have work for him." And so he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that is a clear case of overruling what is there in destiny. And also letting us know that while that is what Walter Cowan experienced, when later on Professor Dr. Hislop asked Swami, "Does everyone go through the same thing?"
Mm.
Swami said, "Not necessarily."
Mm. Okay.
So I think it was one occasion wherein Bhagwan wanted to convey, I think the experience that he gives to every person might be different.
Yes.
Mm.
But the substance of it is same, wherein you have to reap what you sow. And the only way to come out of it is that you learn from your past and secure a better future for yourself by learning from the past and correcting the present and building your future. And knowing that if I have to remove all my luggage, all my baggage, all I have to do is to surrender. And I think that's what Brother Srinivas Rao
referred to. On a lighter vein, actually, I'll recall one experience of one devotee, one Mr. Essen Singh.
Yes.
He used to be called the Topiwala. Swami himself used to address him as Topiwala.
The other hostel is called Essen Singh Block in Vrindavan.
In Vrindavan, yes. Yes. So then he once, I think it's his initial days with Swami. He came down from Delhi, from Bangalore flight, then he came to Parthi. And he did not know Swami personally that time. So he sat near the Dasavataram gate with the devotees. So he just landed and he sat there and Swami came. And then he went past by him, looked at him and said, Donga.
Mm-hmm.
And
Thief.
Mm-hmm.
This person was overjoyed because one is a word from Swami, a look from Swami, all that. He does not know what is Telugu word Donga meant.
Mm-hmm.
He was thrilled. Swami talked to me. So then he was very happy. Then he asked somebody after Swami's darshan, what did he say?
Mm-hmm.
He said, Donga, what does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
Thief. Oh, really? Then he thought to himself, why did he call me a thief?
Mm-hmm.
Then he recalled that, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something wrong he was referring to. Then he remembered that as he was getting down the flight, he picked up the kerchief that is kept as a compliment and pocketed it. Normally, it's not the, though they keep it, it's not your nature to
do it, correct.
Take it off and keep it in your pocket. Then he said, yes, Swami is referring to that.
Oh,
for
God.
A person of his stature to be indulging in that, say, that's a big thing.
Mm.
So then he, see, Swami introduces himself with these small things like, I know. Then you start thinking, okay, if he knows this means he will know something.
Something else also.
That is how, you know, the Bhagavan gets introduced into our life and slowly, slowly, it's not as though we understand Bhagavan's divinity. We enjoy his beauty and love and everything, but not necessarily we understand his divinity. To understand his divinity, we have to go through our own conditioning, and then we are prone to errors, then we are prone to thinking that he may not know everything, all this, then you evolve, then you get to know, oh, he is all knowing, but you need not confine him to only someone who knows your secrets.
Yeah,
true.
Correct.
In fact, just reading one story wherein it sort of explains the law of karma. So there are these two people who go to a monk, and so they ask about their future, and the monk says that you. Person one, the first person, you are going to become a king in a year. And to the other person, the monk says, I am very sorry to say, but you are not going to live for more than a year. Okay. And so both these people, they come back, and the person who was told that he is going to become a king, he started behaving like a king. And he started directing people, ordering people, and he started being arrogant. And he started, he took to vices and everything because he thought, you know, he's going to become the king, so, you know, he's going to live in luxury and he's going to have everything that he wants. He should get adjusted to that kind of a exuberant, luxurious lifestyle, and that is how his approach to life, everything changed actually. And so he was just waiting for that to happen. 1 year, and he's just going to become that. And so he was almost living that kind of a life. And this other man, he was so worried and anxious that, you know, I just have 365 days left, you know, and let me do something, okay. These are the last few days of my life. So he was constantly thinking, what should I do to go back happy? You know, what can I do so that I can at least now do things which will make people think good about me? And so he was trying constantly to do good, think good, and he was that kind of an... Because, you know, in your last moments, you just want to see, make the most of what else is available for you in your life. And that is how months passed, and 6 months passed, 8 months passed, and 11th month, and it became the 12th month, and they saw that nothing has happened. This man is still the king. So to be the king is still the same guy, and he's not yet become the king. Nothing dramatic has happened. And this man
has not died.
He's still continuing.
Beautiful.
So they thought, let's go to that monk. He said, this is what will happen. And we have to ask for an explanation. And because they have spent their whole, that fellow has spent all his money living like a king. And this fellow has spent all his time trying to do so many things, building his good karma. So, went back to the monk. On the way to the monk's hermitage, comes a forest. So as they are passing through the forest, suddenly they are attacked by miscreants. And those people, when they start running after these two, they are thieves and dacoits. So this person was supposed to become the king. He runs up the tree. And he hides in the branches.
Mm-hmm.
And he escapes.
Oh.
And the other man, he also starts running, but somehow the dacoits catch him and they beat him up.
Oh.
And that man somehow survives. And this person was supposed to become the king. He's happily on the tree. Nothing happened to him. And now these dacoits, they had brought with them a pot of gold. So now that nobody is there, they thought, okay, this is a good place. So they dig a pit there and they keep the pot of gold under that tree.
Mm-hmm.
And they go for their next misadventure. And so after they leave, now that this person was supposed to be the king, he saw that gold is there under that tree. So he immediately came down. And the other person, who was also badly bruised, he also came. Now this person immediately, you know, dug the earth and he took that pot of gold, and very happy. And the other person, you know, he was writhing in pain, but they thought, okay, fine, you know, we have come all the way, let's go and meet the monk and ask him what happened, why did all this happen. So the monk then said, see, as Bhagavan says, what you meet in life is fate, and what you make of what you meet in life is what is destiny.
Yeah.
So the monk said that this person was supposed to be the king when he knew that he has one more year. Instead of spending the time usefully, since he whiled away his time, what was supposed to be a kingdom, what was supposed to be the position of a monarch, just got reduced to a pot of gold. And the person who got beaten up, what was supposed to be a clear death and the end of his life, got reduced to some injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And he will recover from that and he'll be fine.
Oh.
So when people ask these questions about why wrong things happen to good people, we never know how this recoiling, this reaction, reflection, resound, as Bhagavan always used to mention in his discourses, happen. For something, the reaction is instant. As so much to say, you bang the your palm on the table and immediately, you know, you also get hurt. So something happened immediately. Something takes a little more time. Something takes a tree takes 15 years to grow. So some karmas are like that. And some probably what you're going through is something that you sowed maybe two janmas before. You never know how everything comes back. But what is definitely sure is everything comes back, and whatever we are experiencing is what we have created for ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think that is a realization. If it comes to us, we will definitely be much happier people in the world. We will never complain, and we will see solutions where people only see problems.
Yes.
Where people see darkness, you will see light. Where people see only complaints, you will see a lot of avenues.
Opportunity. Yes.
Avenues, mm-hmm, for bringing those changes. Mm-hmm. Because they say that when something happens to you and you blame others for it, then you have understood nothing. Something happens to you and you begin to blame yourself for it, then you have understood something.
Mm.
And when something happens to you, you don't blame anybody. No need to blame anybody, you know. Just go through what you have to go through and learn and walk on the path now with conviction on the right path. I think that is when you have understood what is life.
Yeah.
So I think here's the Swami is telling, don't rejoice that your wrong desires have fructified. I think this is a message to everyone, where Swami is saying that you can never escape whatever you do. And in fact, there's another little story that I read some time ago. It just shows how we can definitely turn things around. So there was this person who was meditating under the tree. So this sage suddenly sees Narada.
Mm.
And so he asks Narada, so when are you going to Vaikuntha? He says, yeah, I'm on the way to Vaikuntha only. Oh, so you're going to meet Narayana. Why don't you do me a favor? You know what, I've been doing this penance for so many years and I don't know when Narayana will give me darshan. So can you just ask Narayana what is the status and, you know, when is it likely that he will come and give me darshan? How many more years I have to do penance? So he says, okay, sure, why not? Definitely I will do that. So he goes to Narayana and so he says, Narayana, I saw this sage and, you know, he's doing such severe penance and such a diligent person. So, and he has this question. What is the question? No, he wants to know how many years it is going to take before you appear before him and give darshan. And so Vishnu then says, tell him that he has to do penance for as many number of years as there are leaves on that banyan tree under which he was meditating. And Narada says, that's quite a lot, Vishnu. Then Narayana says, I mean, that is what it is. So if you want to give the message, this is the message you can give him.
Mm.
So Narada feels very sorry for this sage and he comes and this man is very excited. So what did Narayana say? Did you tell my message to Narayana? He says, yes, I told. But I'm very sorry to say, I hope you won't be heartbroken. So this is the thing. No, it doesn't matter, you tell me. No, Narayana said that you have to do that many years of penance as there are leaves on this banyan tree. It was not some guava tree or something. It was a banyan tree. as many number of years as there are leaves on this tree. And the moment Narada said this, the sage just jumped from his seat and he started dancing actually.
Great.
He was ecstatic. He was so happy actually.
Mm.
He said, wow. He said, what happened? No, I'm like, you know, you went to Vishnu, you got back a message from him. He has heard my plea and it is definitely going to happen. I'm really grateful to the Lord. He's so merciful. I'm really, really happy. You know, it is going to happen. And he was like, thank God this has happened. I'm going to, you know, see Vishnu one day and it is going to happen. So he was very, very happy actually.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he was so much in ecstasy, thanking the Lord, so much in joy, thinking about the Lord for all his mercy, for all his kindness, that Vishnu was so impressed that he immediately appeared there.
Mm.
Oh,
Mm-hmm. And so this monk said, oh, you already came. But, you know, Vishnu, please go back because I have not done that penance. And I don't want your words to falsify. Mm-hmm. You know, you said I have to do this many years of penance. So your word should, you know, stand the test of time. So it doesn't matter, you go back. I will do that many years of penance. You can come after that. Mm-hmm. Vishnu says, no. Don't worry. I'm really, really pleased with you. You know, you are so positive.
Mm.
And he says, I can change your destiny just like that. I can change your destiny. If you have this kind of an attitude, I can change anything.
Many a times, actually, when we go through some bad times, and Swami is also not talking to us for some fault in us, we have been told clearly that this is the wrong you have done, and you are almost like banished.
Mm.
And in relation to this story that you said about Vishnu, thinking of that sage, the sage is so happy that the Lord has thought of him.
Yes.
During these difficult times, even for the Lord to think of you or say a word about you, that itself shows that your good times are on the way, actually.
You are actually in the good times only.
Yes. No, otherwise Swami does not budge at all.
Yes. Yes.
That is even worse.
Yes.
You come what may, whatever you may go and how many ever ways you go and plead through this person, that person, the wardens, the vice chancellors, and he won't budge. Mm. But the moment he is inquiring or saying a word about you or willing to listen also, a prayer from, say, Professor Nanjundaya. Because these are the devotees of Swami who used to carry on our behalf.
Mm.
So then this boy, say, the student will be waiting anxiously near the car shed somewhere, waiting near the Krishna statue to see when these people come out, if there is any message for him. And then the moment that message comes from Mr. Nanjundaya or anybody like that, or Warden Mr. Narasimhamurthy, yes, Swami said this. And I'm just thinking about that joy of that sage who heard that words from Narada about what Vishnu thought of him.
Yes.
So like that we used to feel actually.
Yes.
Oh, Swami even said this much.
Hmm.
Even though things have not turned around fully.
Yes.
But that's a very, very positive sign.
Yes.
But if times are still not good, he won't pay even that much heed to that.
Actually, the truth of the matter, I feel, is when Swami is avoiding you, you know, it takes lot more effort for Swami to avoid you than for Swami to look at you, actually. Because, see, when Swami was avoiding you physically, he definitely physically, when you think about it, he will notice you where you're sitting, you know, from 500 meters away. And after, when he comes that side, you know, so he will ensure that he completely becomes so beautifully he walks that you become transparent.
Yeah.
So he will play that game in a manner that you will not know.
Yeah. At least he is avoiding you.
So for him to avoid you, you know, he so carefully he will do it. No?
Yeah.
So because when he wants to avoid you, he will do it in such a tasteful manner that you will get the message.
Correct.
And the others will not have any inkling of that.
See, Swami used all these little instances to make us improve. All these small mistakes we do. Not really big mistakes. They're very, very small, petty mistakes also sometimes. But the way Swami will react and treat you, and it's all refinement for us.
Mm.
That is how we have grown.
Yeah, so beautiful. But when you were talking, I just saw one more thing in this. It still do not rejoice that your wrong desires have fructified. Means Swami is saying right desires are okay. Because many times people think, oh my God, desire. I should not have desires at all. Desirelessness should be. Desirelessness is ultimate. That's fine. But Swami has given ceiling on desires. You should have some good desires, something which are important for your livelihood, something which takes you to Godward path. But do not rejoice on wrong desires. But if you have a very genuine, good, and a rightful desire. If that gets fructified, you should be happy.
Yes.
Do not rejoice on wrong desires means you can rejoice when your right desires are fulfilled, fructified. It's not that Swami says, no desire should be there. Swami doesn't expect that. He doesn't say you just leave everything and just go to a forest and do penance. Be here and have your normal life, but never forget me that I am the center of the whole life of yours. If you remember that, like Swami always beautifully says that the four purusharthas they call, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, means what four objectives of life, if you call them. Dharma, Swami always says, dharma is for artha, means you should have a righteous way of earning your wealth and money. And kama should be for moksha, means the desire should be for the final liberation or for the final emancipation. Bhishma never says don't have a desire at all. So this actually shows that you can have desires, because many people have this feeling that, oh my God, I had this desire, is it okay or not? You just wait. You have a discrimination power. You say it's good or bad. Swami always says, if it's good, you can follow it. No, there's nothing wrong in it. But avoid something which is bad, because if bad, as Chitragupta is noting it down, and you have to come back to it. It will come back to you sometime.
Yes. I mean, Chitragupta will note everything, whether good or bad.
Good or bad. Yeah,
but you will be, you, our tendency is when we are doing good, we want Chitragupta to write it, underline it, bold it. And when we are doing bad, we just hope that Chitragupta is nowhere around.
Or might be in pencil so that he can erase it.
So that is not possible.
Conscience is the word Swami often uses.
Yes. It's your conscience, obviously, to say. That's all. You can't hide your conscience.
You can't hide your conscience.
Conscience.
Yes.
And so that is something which is so emphatically communicated in this. And if you move on to the next central idea in this four segment, in this segment. So Swami says, do not be proud of your beauty, your youth, and your all-round agility. In not so distant future lies the deathly dance of senility. With mobility gone and sight impaired, face wrinkled with grey hair, the servants ridicule you as an old monkey, and you get irritated and shout at them. So basically, to think that your youth, your beauty, everything that you are proud of now is time proof, and to be blind of the obvious, I think that's what Swami is telling. I mean, reminded of how Bhagwan used to always sing that stanza from Bhajagovindam, right?
Yes.
Makuru
dhana jana yavana garvam.
Makuru dhana jana
harati nimesha kala
sarvam.
So, but in this also, actually, if you just take it in a little different context, you, like Swami says, do not be proud of your beauty, youth, and all-round agility. Like Swami, actually we had discussed some time back also, Swami always says there are, you are three, not one.
Yes.
One you think you are, one the others think you are, and one you really are. So this is actually where Swami says that what I think I am is this body. I should be beautiful, I should be nice, I should be presentable, I should look handsome, all these things.
Yes.
I should be well-dressed.
Yes.
But Swami says that is not, that's actually your thing, that is you.
Yeah.
But what actually others think you is your mind.
Yes.
And what you actually are is something beyond. That is Atma. So what I feel, always Swami says, if you want to know who am I, if you want to know your real nature, like how in Lalita Sahasranama also it says, Antar Mukha Samaradhyaya Bahir Mukha Sudurlabha, means I will be attained if you turn inward. If you turn outward, you will never attain me.
Durlabha.
You will not be able to attain me at all. Mm. So if you just might be the same virtues of beauty, youth, and agility. Same thing, if you just turn it inward, maybe just don't bother about the body. Just try to apply it to the mind. It gives such a beautiful meaning and such a beautiful experience you get. That the same mind which is beautiful, youthful, and agile, it'll directly take you to God. The same concept. Swami says that don't think what you are, you think you are, is the body. Don't bother about that, because that it'll become a mad monkey. It'll become like an old senile. It'll just drop down.
Mm-hmm.
But what you carry with you is your mind.
Yes.
And the ultimate reality which is there with you. If you work on those, if you make that youthful, that beautiful, and that agile, whatever, then actually it will take you nearer to me. So the next question comes, how to make the mind beautiful, how to make the mind youthful. So I feel youthful means, mind being youthful means, if I don't allow my past, my tendencies, my likes, my dislikes to cloud and clutter my present. Like if I talk to someone, if any preconceived notion about that person, about a situation, clouds my ability to understand or judge something, my mind is not, it's already dull, it is not beautiful, it is not youthful. But if the same mind, if I actually go and encounter a situation with that freshness, that this situation is given by God to me, let me do it, let me do my thing fullest, without any of these inhibitions coming and actually inhibiting me from doing my work fully. If I do that, then my mind becomes youthful. And like one agile, for the word agile, one beautiful example which comes to my mind is our hostel life.
Yes.
I'll take my example. I finished my engineering. I had a single-seater room. Finally, I was only one, it's a big room of 8x8 or 10x10 it was. Mm. Only I was there in the whole room.
Mm.
I suddenly come here for MBA. I have to share it with 14 people.
Mm.
What is this? I was like shocked. Mm. What is happening here? Automatically, Swami teaches you. When you live with so many people around you, that empathy, that understanding, and working in a team, all these things come very, very naturally to it. You will have a flair for that. Because, and adapt, agile. He makes your mind agile. You start from the morning, suddenly, everything, our students' life, so much impact it has made on us. So at one point you're doing suprabhatam. Second time you're doing jogging. Third time you're doing some, you're having a very tough class on business law. I remember business law in MBA.
Yeah.
And then next moment you're having beautiful lesson of Swami. Then you have a Paranam session going on. And then you have a presentation. You're working for assignments. And finally you do a night prayer and sleep. So you are made so agile and adaptable that your mind is always ready to do something new. It's never tired. It's never tired. So a mind which is so youthful and beautiful, I call such a mind youthful and beautiful. It doesn't have any clutter of the past. But again, there's a warning here. People think that, oh my God, no clutter of the past means what? If there is a problem at hand for me, a project has come, I have to make a project plan. You mean to say I should just forget all my concepts of engineering, all my concepts of commerce? Swami doesn't say that. It is not giving away the technical knowledge, the commerce or the mathematics or the physics or the chemistry which you learned. Swami never says those. Those have to be used because Swami says for livelihood you need them. But these are those things which actually help you in growing in your life, the life skills what Swami says. Those, for that you should not have any baggage. If you don't have a baggage, something which comes from the past, then you can live your life to the fullest. Then once we actually start understanding and living like that, then Swami says that your mind becomes still. That is the final objective of everything. Because even Shankaracharya says, aparoksha anubhuti. He has written one beautiful book which says, aparoksha anubhuti means a direct experience. Direct experience comes only when the mind is still. Mind which is still is a mind which is beautiful. So, basically, I feel what in this, whatever Swami says, wherever he says this is not good, he has created an opportunity for you to be good in a way which is, you can actually turn it into something which is actually very beneficial. You are just talking about that.
Yes.
Make anything into an opportunity. So the body will drop down, body will become senile. But if the same thing you work on the mind, same traits you try to get to the mind, it becomes beautiful and actually becomes a stepping stone for you to reach God.
See, how will the mind turn inwards? See, you are busy flaunting your beautiful hair locks, mustaches, sideburns, and then your youthful, Swami says, bhujabalam, khandabalam, you do muscular development. And then you think that this is going to be your personality. And slowly, slowly, all this will start dropping. Swami used to say very beautifully that Lord sends 3 postcards. Those days, no emails.
Yeah,
so the example was about postcards.
Mm.
So the first postcard is, you know, when you get a gray hair, the black ones turn gray.
Mm.
And the second postcard is when you get cataract, the vision is blurred.
Mm.
And these are all telling you that, see, your end is nearing.
Yama is knocking at your door.
Yes. And the third one is you become teethless, toothless, or what you call. So teeth start falling.
Mm.
And but today, actually, gray hair, we are coloring them. And we are transplanting loss of hairs.
Mm.
And then cataract is replaced with intraocular lenses.
You can be better working in the hospital, you know
have,
that.
Now for teeth loss, you have dentures.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And then only 3 postcards I may refer to, but there are 2 more postcards I add now with knee pains. Knee pains and hip pains. So we are replacing them with prosthetics.
Yeah, knee transplant.
Knee replacements are done now. And then we have heart attack also. A first jolt is given to you. Then you do a bypass surgery. Overcome all these things. You are beating God actually. Come, you send it, I will replace it. So this is how actually these are all things. Up, as you said, how to make the mind turn inwards. These are all opportunities actually. God is not having any evil designs to hurt you, to pull you down, to insult you, to mock at you like an old monkey, what he is referring to, Musilkoti. He himself is mocking at you because his purpose is to make you turn inward. But how do you do otherwise? If you don't do, even death, they say, death is the greatest idea of God. Like the example you gave of the person who knew that he is going to live only one more year. So each one, if he thinks that I am not going to be here, I am going to leave my body, I am going to die, then you will work for something what is beyond, because this is not the life. There is something more. Then you start thinking about other life, other worlds. That is how actually these messages are actually coming to you, knocking at you, to turn you inwards. That's how I got this.
In fact, as they say, the best way to lead life is to think that this is the last day of my life.
Yes.
If every day we think this is the last day of my
last
life.
Last moment. Can be next moment.
Next moment, we never know. And Brother Bhargava, when you were mentioning about, you know, our mind being youthful, very beautiful statement you made. When the mind is steady, the mind is beautiful. When the mind is still, the mind is beautiful. And if you see the hostel, the example you are referring to, the reason why minds are beautiful is there is less distraction.
Yes.
There is more concentration on Bhagavan, more concentration on your duties, and there is more purity in your whole being.
In your purpose of what you do, correct.
So, the way to be youthful, the way to be beautiful is by infusing more and more purity into your system. And the hostel schedule is such that by virtue of less distractions, by virtue of less communication with the external world and more interaction within this satsang environment, more interaction in an environment where there is constant contemplation and discussion about the divine. So you are in a space where your purity quotient is increasing every day.
I'll just give you just finish your thought.
That's what I was saying, because you know, when you were talking about it, about our mind being youthful and beautiful, I thought the way for the mind to be beautiful is for the mind to be pure. And I think that is what the hostel environment is providing to the
not children. Just to the youngsters in the hostel. If you see in the ashram also,
same thing.
And those people who are close to Swami,
yes,
they don't age. They look young.
Exactly.
Because of the purity. Because with whom you are, it's not necessarily your purity.
Yes.
You are with the one who is the purest. And
but
you,
we should not people should not think that what is this? You're only talking about hostel, only talking about ashram. What about us who is staying somewhere outside?
Yeah,
but in your own way, if you make your life moderated or regulated in a way that you actually do everything for the sake of the Lord.
Yes.
It becomes a beautiful thing to do.
Talking about beauty and youthfulness, we should not miss mentioning Swami himself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is what I was coming to.
Because Swami himself used to tell, "Naku madatal levu."
Yeah.
The same madatal.
There are no wrinkles.
There are no wrinkles. Even at 86, I tell you, the face was so beautiful. I don't know if you talk about Swami shaving every day, sometimes twice, twice he shaves. And, the skin can get scruffed up, but his skin never, it was like that. And towards the end, Swami also said that he is a Nitya Baludu.
Yes.
Ever childlike. And his face, I tell you, sitting where you sit near the Vedam group and the Bhajan groups where we sat, and I used to see him many a times towards the end also. He used to look like a small baby and so beautiful.
And freshly blossomed flowers.
Yes. That itself is a proof of all that he is talking about. If you have that purity, this beauty is automatically made.
I'll give you a very burning example.
In fact, the one way to be even externally beautiful is to cultivate that internal purity.
Absolutely. The beauty comes
One burning example. I'll give you a burning example. Like yesterday only, we had our immersion ceremony. Yes. If you just witness what happens outside, they compete with each other to make the idol bigger and bigger. Idol is made by someone. Just buy it and get it and keep it there and do some puja. And then after that, immersion day, they'll be dancing on the streets with, they'll be dancing. They'll be having those, they'll make the percussion beats and all.
Yes.
More of a cacophony than anything else. But the same thing, if you just see our students, our staff, people who work here, they make beautiful works of art. That creativity is channelized towards God.
Yes.
So what comes out, we witnessed yesterday. We had every type of a thing which was there. You had a lamp,
year on year it is improving.
Mm-hmm.
And the primary school and the higher secondary school boys, they come with a beauty. They do, like Swami says, you should never dissociate, this is worldly, this is spiritual. They master the minions, minions, cartoon characters.
Yes.
They brought out the message of God in that. Then when Robo carrying Ganesha. So all these things, they marry the spirituality and the worldly thing so beautifully.
Yes.
This happens the way you told. Beauty, if you have, you have that youthfulness in you, you have that moderation without any distractions.
Yes.
So the creativity which is there is channelized towards God.
Yes.
So you get these works of, beautiful works of art.
Yes.
Wow. Also, Swami talks, about this people thinking that spirituality is for something at a later stage in life, post-retirement, maybe. So, because you think that youthfulness and youthful stage is a time to enjoy life. But Swami always used to warn that in old age, actually your bones will ache. You will have all these kinds of diseases which will not allow your mind to be still. And you cannot think of God at that time. So start early.
There is no way you can do it then if you have not done all your life.
Yes.
In fact, there is another story that Bhagwan says that there was this wife who always used to spend a lot of time in divine contemplation, and the husband never liked it. Husband said, this is the time of our life, as you mentioned, that we should not be lost in, too much of devotion and all that. We have now got our goals to meet, and we have to make our house, we have to do all these things now. This is the time to earn money and lead a very comfortable life. There is time for all that, not now. So that's what the husband used to always say, and the wife never agreed. And there was always constant sort of bit of a disagreement on this. And then there came a time when the husband suddenly fell ill, and so the wife called the doctor, and the doctor gave some medicines. These medicines need to be taken 3 times a day and for 5 days, whatever. And so the wife was giving the medicines, and for the next day, the wife did not give the medicines on time. And the husband then asked the third day, "What happened? Why didn't you give me the medicine? I was supposed to take, 3 times a day this one." And the wife said that, if you think that whatever I am doing can be postponed, then your medicine also can be postponed. Because, as Swami says, that is a roga. What he is going through is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, the medicine is the medicine that the doctor has given. Bhagavan says, what you are going through is bhavaroga.
Bhavaroga.
And for this bhavaroga, the medicine is the namasmarana and all the sadhana. So, and Swami says the bhavaroga started from the time you were born. Mm. You are supposed to do all these things.
Right.
So that, you know, you can, with time, come out of all this. But if you decide to take the, though even though you have been suffering from 60 years, if you decide to take the medicine only when you are 61st year, obviously, at that point in time, that medicine probably has lost its value and the medicine will not have any effect on you and you don't know how to take the medicine, you won't remember to take the medicines and there is nobody to administer the medicines also to you actually.
And this same person who has worked for money and wealth accumulations, more often than not, it is these very people who admitted towards the end that what I did is wrong. And they will have to admit to the persons whom they have critical of, censured them for being spiritual and going after babas. They then admire them that what you did is much noble and that's a way to lie, that's a way to live. So many times I have seen this.
Yes, and I think that is the reason why Swami always was so emphatic and when he mentioned that spirituality is for people right from the time they learn to think and speak, and that's how the Balvikas movement started, and and that is how Swami spent all his time, a lion's share of his time, with the students, and that is how Swami was youthful.
Yes, correct.
And that is the way for us.
That is one solution to this, what Swami is saying, that we are educational dolls.
Yes.
That actually spirituality should be taught like a science actually. From the early stages.
Yes.
So that they don't have to later on unlearn what they have learned.
Yes.
And then begin this journey.
Yes.
So because it is undeniable fact that spirituality and consciousness, these are all the basis of our existence.
Yes.
Missing this, if you are building the castle of life.
Yes.
Only to be blown away.
Yes.
Later on.
With the storms of life.
Yes. A simple breeze.
Yes, and you'll be blown away. And that is what we are seeing most of the time. You know, it's a developed country, but you'll find 40-50% of the youth are in depression all the time. So, that is what is happening.
Like you were talking last week about VUCA.
Yeah, VUCA, yes. Correct.
Yes. Swami has very beautifully foreseen this.
Yeah, and he has done, we had a discussion last time also, but
yes.
People are realizing it now.
Absolutely.
He started this educational institution only with that vision.
Yes, in mind, yeah.
Absolutely. Beautiful. So, when you think about these four stanzas, and everything leads on from the education standpoint, where Swami is telling that the heart of education is about the cultivation of heart. And then when Bhagavan is talking about how we should lead our life, all this education should lead us to build the right sadhana. That is the true wealth that we have to acquire of doing things which will take us towards God.
Yeah.
And that should start early in life.
Yes.
That cannot be postponed. I always say this, and I strongly believe in this, that if you postpone God in your life gets postponed.
And Swami always says, the biggest tamasha is,
yes,
if he has to go to the 15th stanza with mobility gone and sight impaired.
Yes.
But Swami says, see, the mobility of the body has gone, but the mind is still so mobile, so active.
Yes.
Still he wants to taste things, still he wants to see things, still he wants to experience things.
Yes. Yes.
So, as you told, if you don't start early.
Yes. And he's getting irritated. See, he's getting, when the servants ridicule you,
yes,
you're getting irritated,
yes,
and you're shouting at them.
Mm.
But that, at 60, even if someone shouts at you, you should be okay. It should not bother you.
I was thinking of enough of life. I was thinking of our workplace where there are old people. And we say, this old man has come. See, we are also mocking, not realizing that we ourselves will be in that position one day.
Yes.
It's a full cycle.
Yes.
Well, it happens to everybody.
But I think, see, if the mind was young, then even if someone ridicules you,
You won't bother at all.
It will not bother you. You'll be okay with it. You know?
Yeah, you'll also might be laugh with it. Yeah, correct. I'm a monkey. Fine. Yeah, what is it?
Yeah. When everything becomes a sport, I think sometimes I feel whatever happens to you, there are two ways of looking at it. Either you laugh it off or you shake it off.
Yeah.
and that's how life will become once you sort of spend a little more time and seeing. What you should really worry about in life and what you should not.
If someone is laughing at you and you are getting irritated and angry, that means you are still lodged outside yourself.
Yes.
Yes.
But by this time, if somebody is still, nobody will have the guts to laugh at you if you are a person who is living within. I have seen this. Mm-hmm. You just can't mock at a person who is a spiritual being actually.
Yes.
So I've seen any number of people who are worthy of worship actually.
If you laugh at someone and that person is not
getting affected,
then you yourself are becoming the laughing stock.
I've seen Kuppa Bhairag Shastri Garu or Kamavadani Garu, they are very old. But you don't look at them like, you know, some old hulks or anybody. The form itself is worshipable actually. Because
they have a presence, they are worshipping,
they led their life worshipping the Lord.
And that presence?
The form fructifies, actually has a fructification towards the end of life. It is so sacred in its core actually. And that is reflected out.
True. I feel the power of that presence came from their purity.
Yes.
And I think that is the basis.
So before we, actually that's how we should conclude with this, that before we come to a stage where we are laughing at ourselves or somebody else is laughing, you go within and merge it with the indweller.
Yes.
That's all. Otherwise you will be hanging outside and again you are at loss. Where are you?
No, but one more thing which like, even if you are old, even if you look like a mad monkey, like monkey, musili koti. But I've seen one thing, especially in Swami, needless to say, and others who are very, very close devotees of Swami. There will be a glow in the eyes.
Yes.
Because the eyes, like whatever you do, if you have that inner purity
it
and that sadhana,
hide, it cannot hide.
Those eyes will be like, there'll be flashes of lightning. Yes. They'll be like that. So that you cannot take away from someone.
You can't take away.
And if someone sees you, basically I think Swami is mentioning about those who have led their life thinking that this is a body. If someone has actually lived a life like that, about thinking with dedication, with surrender, with purity.
Yes.
Their presence, as you just told about Kamadhani Garu or anyone else.
Yes.
Even our own grandparents.
Yes.
The old timers who led this life on spiritual path.
Mm.
So wonderful to see them.
Yes.
Beautiful. Their foreheads smeared with that vibhuti.
Even if they are old, even if they are wrinkled, but they'll have, as we told, there'll be a presence. When they are there, you get that awe, get that respect for them.
Yes.
Wow.
So that is a person who lives a life, who leads a life on a spiritual path.
They are ever young.
Yes, they are ever
beautiful.
Actually,
all these poems are telling us, constantly reminding us of our true nature.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is not, what we are not.
Mm.
So what's left is what we are.
What we are.
True. Beautiful. So dear listeners, there is so much more to discuss. And you know, for last two sessions, we have been discussing on this segment. And we have to move on because we have to move on. Otherwise, there is so much that we can definitely contemplate on. But I think we have at least opened up some leads. We have opened up some thought processes for you to think and for us to chew on and at least pick up some essence, digest some essence which will translate into beautiful fragrance in our lives as we walk on this path. So if you have any queries or comments, as always, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. We look forward to your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Thank you so much for being with us and being with us through this entire Thursday Live program, offering our salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet for this yet another opportunity to bask in his message. We take your leave. Thank you so much. Sayonara.